Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber.
This episode of Red Inca, we talk about the man who went to Pakistan for 30 hours during the war to play cricket.
Vedat Soglu, international franchise cricketer, an athlete owner at Superboost, a better-for-you sports drink stocked in 7-Eleven Woolworths across Australia.
We talk about Pakistan, the PSL, Melbourne, international relations, accounting, fast leg spin, freelance, club cricket, his father, and losing the game off the last ball.
Big fan of that because I had absolutely no idea you were going to flog that that drink. That was absolutely seamless and perfect. I love that you did that a lot. We'll have to mention that again at the end. The reason that you're on is because of what happened in the PSL recently, and it's really fascinating. But let's take me back to what happens. You know, you're just going about your day, and suddenly you get a message about playing in the PSL after the stop of the league and the war and all these sorts of things are happening. Take me through kind of the first 30 seconds after you get a message like that.
So I get a message. I've just gone to the local M&S at my where I'm living in Northwood. Obviously, these sort of things happen in franchise cricket often. Players pull out, players get injured, whatever. And you're always on sort of alert and standby in many ways. So you're constantly, you have possibilities put at you. And you're constantly let down by them as well. So for me, the first 30 seconds were like, right, here's another one. Let's just see where it ends up.
How much research and everything do you have to do at that point? Because I'm just going to assume you're not an expert on international affairs or anything, right? Like there's definitely something like you're going to have to talk to people. Who do you talk to? How many people do you talk to? How quickly do you get hold of them? Do you have their numbers? Are you WhatsApping people going, who's an expert in Pakistani-Indian conflicts?
Yeah, funnily enough, I studied international relations at uni. That was one of my, I did a double degree, and that was the art side of it.
So you didn't need to talk to anyone. You could write a whole piece on this yourself.
No, I wouldn't go that far. But no, there was a pretty methodical sort of process I followed in the whole thing. The first person I messaged was Tom Coley-Cadmore, who has been a long-standing player at Peshawar Zalmi. I wanted to see if he was going back. David Warner is someone who I played in the Cayman Islands with. Obviously, he's pretty clued in with what's going on in cricket leagues around the world and everything like that. And he's a big part of the PSL. So I spoke to him as well. Then I went to the ACA, the Australian Cricketers Association, as our players' representative union. And just sort of asked them about their thoughts on the whole thing. They said they support me either way, and they had contracted a third party security analyst, whatever you call it, to do a bit of a risk assessment on whether Australian cricketers should go and play. So once all those boxes got ticked off, I just looked at the opportunity and the size and scale of the PSL and thought, right, like this is something that's too good to turn down.
What I find interesting is that everything you just said there makes sense, but this is the thing that I don't think was in the piece that you wrote on Cricket Info, and I was very interested in, is what about insurance? How does insurance work with something like this?
You know, it's funnily enough, I'm on the pension committee for all the Australian cricketers as well, and insurance is something that's, the coverage around the game is changing so quickly at the minute, you know, with players maybe like playing a lot more franchise cricket around the world than what they once were. So the structures around that and the benefits for players playing franchise cricket versus playing state cricket are all being sort of like jigged around at the minute. And to give you a short answer, we have insurance has worked into all of our contracts. Whether they're like fully comprehensive or not, I don't know entirely. It's a complicated world, and we as franchise players lean on the ACA for protection on a lot of that sort of stuff. But yeah, to give you an answer, mate, like, actually, I can't. Like, I don't know.
Okay. So once you've made the decision, I suppose I should ask, how hard is it to make the decision? Because this is a good opportunity for you. You play a lot of, you play a lot of A tier and sort of B tier leagues. You're not a player who's automatically getting the top gigs all the time. So you're fighting for this. Are you seeing this as an opportunity, or are you just seeing it as just another gig?
It's always an opportunity. I mean, I'm 26 years old, so I sort of view myself as someone who has a good bit of upside and is sort of at that age profile now where you're on a bit of an uphill, I don't know, trajectory or whatever. So I view it as exposure. I view it as opportunity. I view it as if you can go there, have a great tournament, it can lead, you know, to another thing and another thing and another thing. And we've seen it happen so often in cricket where things change so quickly. Your whole world can just be completely turned over. I mean, I was sat next to Mitch Owen in the Hobart Hurricanes change room this year, and we obviously all saw that play out for him. I think he's just won 4 Man of the Match awards in the Major League Cricket in the US. Mm. So things change so quickly.
So that's the cricket side of things. What about, do you have to talk to family and friends as well? And like, I remember a couple of years ago, I wrote a big piece about Afghanistan, and I was offered a chance to go to Afghanistan. And a family friend of ours, who is probably a spy, but I'm not sure I'm officially allowed to say that, but I'm sure he is a spy. He went to Cambridge and he looks like a spy. He was just like, don't go to Afghanistan. And he gave me all the reports of why I shouldn't go there. But there's a part of me as a writer that's just like, yeah, but how many chances am I going to get to go to Afghanistan? You're going into a place which is not just a war, but a potentially huge conflict, right? Like, how do you kind of explain that to, you know, loved ones and to everyone else?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, India, without going into the details of the war and everything too much, India and Pakistan have been in conflict for a long time, right? So I guess it's been simmering away in the background. I went in 2022 to join Peshawar's army, and like, I had a great time over there. People were really hospitable, like, felt secure. When you've got a group of other foreigners around you, like, you feel you take security from that. So, and speaking to family, it's like a way up the opportunity against the risk. I'd assess the risk through the third-party security provider that the ACA had engaged, and I just sort of went, right, let's just take it. It's 30 hours. What can go wrong? I guess a fair bit. I don't know. But, from my prior experience in Pakistan, had a great time and was happy to go back.
It's also, I'm kind of jumping between the cricket and the lifestyle, or whatever you would call it, the war, the conflict, because it's really interesting. You are making a decision for 30 hours that could define, you know, the next few years of your life. Like, it's, and you had to, how long did you have to make this decision? I know you said you talked to a few people, but I'm assuming you didn't have a week. There would have been like a couple of days, right?
Yeah. So I think I found out on the Wednesday, and then on the Saturday I was flying, so yeah, less than 24 hours to make the decision. And it all happens pretty quickly. You know, everyone in, I guess, the cricket world moves really, really fast, and along with that, sort of, maybe people knew that the PSL was going to restart before me getting signed, so a lot of those risk assessments had been done prior to me finding out that I was going to have any involvement in the restart, so I could lean on a lot of that information and that sort of heavy lifting that had been done. It felt completely secure, safe. There's obviously a risk, but I don't know, man. Like, I was just happy to go there, take the opportunity. From my prior experience in Pakistan, had a great time, felt super hospitable, and just wanted to, you know, part of my decision making this whole thing as well is like, obviously, like, the PSL is a great showpiece for Pakistan, and if I can be a part of the sort of storytelling there and part of the whole feel good story about Pakistan, and they're open for business and they're wanting to engage with the world and ready to engage with the world and everything like that, then, you know, that's a narrative that I'm happy to be a part of.
Is that, to go back, I mean, we'll talk about your family and obviously Sunshine Heights and all the background, but because of the, you know, you studying international relations and everything else, is there a different sort of view that you have with things like this? Like, do you think that the kind of person you are, sort of, you know, maybe more curious and maybe more open to these sorts of things, is that a big part in, you know, you making a decision like this? Or is this just, you're a cricketer and you offered a gig and they were going to fly you in and out and it was only 30 hours?
Yeah, no, it is a big part of who I am. I think, you know, I look at the force for good that cricket can be. All those things I just spoke about there, showing the world that Pakistan's sort of open and whatever. And, if there's a degree of risk in me putting myself out there to be part of that story, then I'm sort of happy to take that risk to a degree. I guess that stems from my upbringing, like Sunshine Heights Cricket Club, a cricket club where there's a strong sort of refugee, migrant feel through the whole club. A lot of people had come to Australia through sort of, you know, those refugee routes, and, you know, there were asylum seekers at the club who'd just gotten off a boat from Sri Lanka like months before they were playing cricket at Sunshine Heights and stuff like that. So yeah, I've definitely got like a connection with you know, the whole story. My family, like my grandparents, left Greece and Macedonia in the 1960s after it had gone through, you know, years of civil war and, you know, post World War Europe and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely have a connection with sort of like, I wouldn't go as far to say like country building or anything like that, but like, you know, I want to be part of the whole sort of narrative around showcasing the best of people and places.
And talk about your background a little bit. So your father, I want to get this right. Is your father is Greek and your mum is Macedonian? Is that right? Is that the, if I yeah, got the
they right they conflict with each other all the time as well. The Greeks and Macedonians don't say I don't like the time.
That's all I'm saying. I'm just pointing it out there that, you know, you've been involved in these conflicts from birth. But it's really interesting, is that, like, I obviously grew up in Melbourne, so I grew up more northwest or northern suburbs and played cricket in the northwest. And a lot of the kids I played with, their parents didn't speak English. They didn't come from cricket backgrounds. How does your dad sort of get involved with cricket then?
Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Yeah, so dad was like a 10-year-old, grew up in Sunshine, and effectively like the local guys at Sunshine Heights Cricket Club at the time, who were mostly made up of like the traditional sort of cricket playing Australian we'd all sort of associate with the game, effectively embraced my dad as like a young Greek migrant kid. You know, he'd migrated over with his family and he was born in Australia, but cricket was definitely not something that was like commonly spoken about in the house and things like that. So yeah, from being embraced as a 10-year-old by the guys at Sunshine Heights Cricket Club, he sort of went on to then volunteer and give back to the club even still now. I think he's the, I don't want to get this wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's the vice president. If not the vice president, like he's very involved in the club in every way you can imagine. I mean, he was the president for like 15 years, I want to say, and he's held all sorts of roles at the club. So, that's effectively from my dad's involvement dating back to him as a 10-year-old, I've sort of gone on to play at Sunshine Heights when I was a kid. I've been the treasurer of the club, I've been the secretary of the club, junior coordinator, junior coach, premiership player in the seniors and the juniors, and I've since gone on to play for Melbourne University in Premier Cricket and then, you know, Big Bash and leagues around the world. So I've got a lot to thank cricket for, and thank God for the guys at Sunshine Heights, the Dave Richardsons and the Millers, the Ralph Millers, and these guys that embraced my dad when he was a youngster.
But I mean, your dad's story is the kind of story that of the kids I grew up with who sort of came to cricket randomly and then played it. And you look at the, you know, the surnames of some of the Australian cricketers, and you realize that, you know, there's a lot of Croatian and a Greek and Italian backgrounds and everything. But then what's interesting about you is that I don't want to slander every other cricketer in the world, but mostly when you get to kind of the professional level, the idea of you being the junior coordinator of your cricket club or being the treasurer, I don't even think most cricketers could be like a treasurer for their cricket club. Like, so why do you keep giving back? Because it's important for people to know Sunshine Heights isn't a district club, right? Like it's the level below that. It's one of the other, the many, many turf organizations that we have in Melbourne. We have too many turf competitions, but that's for you and I to complain about off air one day. But, you know, it's a really important club, as you said, for many different reasons. But it is weird for a professional cricketer to be as involved with club cricket as you seem to still be.
Yeah, I was. I finished high school, so I was 18. Time on my hands, and I guess volunteering at Sunshine Heights was sort of like the family business in a way. Not very lucrative, but it was what we did. And I got involved as a junior coach first, then sort of like progressed to junior coordinator role, then secretary stuff, and the treasury. You know, alongside cricket was never a reality for me growing up. Like I was never particularly good. I changed my bowling action from like a slow leg spin to a fast leg spin, and that's when I started getting good. But, you know, through that whole process from 18, 19, 20, 21, whilst I was playing district cricket and getting better at my own personal game, I was studying at university. I worked for Zenith Investment Partners, which is a funds management. I worked for KPMG, so yeah, that's maybe the accounting connection there in the treasury. So yeah, my ambitions weren't necessarily to like be a cricketer. You know, whilst I loved it, enjoyed it, had a great time playing on the weekends and training through the week. Just the reality for me wasn't that I was going to be a professional cricketer. So I pursued other things in my life. And, you know, I actually have a lot to thank volunteering at Sunshine Heights for, not only because of the cricket career I've had, but I always encourage youngsters to volunteer at their club because you get so many other skills from it. So, like, you know, the treasury stuff related directly back to my work at KPMG, the, you know, governance stuff, you learn so much about, like, good governance and maybe bad governance in local cricket clubs where you're struggling for volunteers and things like that. But you just learn a lot, and a volunteer led organization where people are just looking for people to fill any role is a great place to sort of like have a crack and learn.
But talk me through the change with your leg spin. So it sounded like you're a traditional leg spinner. You perhaps realize that in T20 cricket, being a little bit faster works. Does that mean that you get a longer run up, or do you go from being front on to side on? Like, what are the technical changes that you make that turns you from a club cricketer, a good club cricketer, to and PSL player?
I'll tell you exactly what happened. So I was at Sunshine Heights Cricket Club training. I was like 18 or 19 at this point. I just finished my year 12 studies. I was bowling in the nets, and Luke Simpson, who was like the club captain coach at the time, told me to bowl with more energy. My interpretation of that was like, all right, I'll just like run in faster and try and bowl as quick as I can. So did that, and that was like the light bulb moment, really. Then I did that on the weekend and did well on the weekend. Then I went again and again and again, and then I was like, all right, well, I've done pretty well this season at Sunshine Heights as a 18 or a 19-year-old. Maybe I should go to Melbourne University and try and have a crack at Premier Cricket. And then I sort of like started in the fifth grade, did well there, fourth grade, third grade, seconds, first, and onwards. But that was kind of like that moment with Luke Simpson, captain coach of Sunshine Heights Cricket Club, sort of was the light bulb for me. Thank God I don't have to pay him a royalty now. He did it pro bono.
You've done enough giving back to Sunshine Heights. I think you're okay. So the interesting thing about that is I was told the exact same thing at the same age. But my problem was that when I got the more energy through my action, I didn't realize that I had to change my action. And so I just stopped spinning the ball. So I basically bowled like a shit Chris Harris or a shit Virat Kohli, like almost like cutters. And if I just turned side on rather than trying to be front on, which I'd always been, I probably would have been able to do that as well. And it's for me, I grew up in the Shane Warne era where everyone was taught to walk in and bowl leg spin. And it's like, yeah, that's great if you've got big set of shoulders on you and you're, you know, the strongest wrist of all time. But for the rest of us leg spinners, we actually need to get through the crease, right? It's such a... my son was bowling wrist spin the other day in the nets, and I said, stop trying to bowl slow. The wrist will make the ball come out slow. Get through the crease.
Yeah, it's... I always say you have to have some sort of point of difference. So the real technical stuff, there are like key fundamentals that I guess you need to adhere to, but otherwise you need to have some sort of point of difference. You look at the best bowlers now, Narayan has his whole thing, and so many other white ball spinners have like Rashid Khan obviously has his point of difference. So many spinners need a point of difference to succeed and do well. So I always encourage people to like find that and then kind of build something around it.
Really interested in your professional path then. So, okay, you go to Melbourne Uni, you work your way up there. That makes a lot of sense. You've played three List A games and like 70 T20 games, right, at this point. And that doesn't count your T10 games, which is probably another 30 or 40, right?
You're more than that.
Is it that you are aiming... Are you aiming yourself specifically at the shorter format, or is that just where your skills go naturally, or is it just that you've sort of exploded into T20 cricket and you haven't got the opportunities maybe in some of the other formats yet?
I think my natural skill set is suited to T20 cricket and white ball cricket. The one-day format is a bit of a strange one, right? Like we played in Australia, but I guess it's like the state cricket lists are kind of built around Shield cricket and red ball cricket rather than T20 stuff. And then also like a lot of the List A cricket, that happens in Australia clashes with, like, I've been going to the Abu Dhabi T10 and then the ILT 20 after the Big Bash each year. And I've just prioritized the T20 stuff, which is probably where, like, the scale and a lot of the excitement in the game is. So that's just kind of what I've prioritized and chased, and that's kind of got me to the point I'm at now with all the games I've played and the proportion of List A versus first class versus T20 cricket versus T10 cricket that I've played.
And you talked a lot about the ACA before. Are you a contracted player, or are you a freelance? Like, do you have a long-term contract with a Big Bash team, or do you have a long-term contract with anyone? Or is everything pretty much freelance for you at the
moment?
Totally
freelance. Like, yeah, I've always sort of been really curious and really excited about the travel opportunities that cricket provide for me. So I've always, I've always, like, chased those and pursued those to the fullest. The freelance lifestyle. I mean, I think people glamorize the T20 cricketer and T20 cricket and franchise cricket. Whilst it can be, like, amazing, and it is amazing in so many ways, it's also, you've got those realities of being a freelancer where, you don't know where your next gig's going to come from. You just got to be, like, sort of on edge and on standby all the time. And that's definitely, like, the reality for me. I've had some great moments where you're riding the wave and there's a real sort of, good feeling about everything. And then, you know, you go through the depths of it as well when you're struggling for a gig and stuff like that. So a lot of it for me is just about, like, I know people say it all the time, but sticking to processes and stuff like that and just sort of, like, trusting that things are going to work out. And, you know, continuing to train and continuing to work behind the scenes and just know that you'll get your opportunity, you'll get your chance. It might be something as strange as, like, a one-off PSL game after a war, or, you know, after a conflict breaks out. That opportunity is coming around, and just stick at it. But, I've got a pretty good team around me as well. Like, I've got, my agents are brilliant. I've got Carl Crow, who's, like, my dedicated spin bowling coach. I've got Tom Scolle, who does a lot of my batting coaching. And then I've got, you know, like, a team at Elite Sport Medicine in Melbourne who do a lot of my, like, training stuff and physical preparation. So, yeah, I've sort of, like, built a team around me over the past 5 years, and it's a lot easier to stay motivated and determined and persistent with it when you've got that support network around you.
Take me through. So you're going to Pakistan for 30 hours. I'm assuming of all the weird things you've done in T20 cricket, coming in and out for one game is probably a little bit newer to you. I know it's becoming quite common, so you might have done it once or twice before. Take me through how you prepare mentally. Forget the war and the conflict and all that sort of stuff, but how do you prepare mentally as a cricketer to go into a place, play one game, and then fly back out again? Like, how does that even work?
I think you look back to the body of work you've done in the lead-up to it. So, like, no one would have seen that I was in India with Tom Scolle on a trip with, so I was with him, Jake Weatherall, Jono Wells, and Joel Curtis on a week long training camp in India. I then went to the Netherlands, played two games in the top class there, and then went to the UK, played a few games of club cricket there. So with that body of work behind me, I actually felt, like, fine going to the PSL to play for 30 hours. Like, it was no real issue. I remember saying to my coach Carl Crow, I actually don't feel like I could have had a better lead into this. So that's sort of like an idea of where my headspace was at the time. It's just that goes back to the whole thing around, like, sticking to the processes and knowing that the opportunity is going to come. You just got to be ready to take it. You got to be doing what you need to do to be in that position. So, yeah, take the confidence from the body of work that I've done, I suppose.
So now, take me through the game. So you're playing for the Multan Sultans. I've got that right, haven't I?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm trying to remember which franchise. Yeah. You're playing for Ali's team. I'm sure Ali met you. Ali likes to meet everyone. So I'm sure Ali came over to chat to you. You're playing for his team. How many people around the Multan Sultans would you have a relationship with? Because you've played in so many different leagues, I'm sure there are people there that you know, but you're not having to introduce yourself to everyone, right?
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Yeah, so the Peshawar's army was playing the game after us in the evening. We played in the afternoon. So, like, all those guys come out, and it's actually, like, great to see, because I haven't seen them for a few years. A lot of the Pakistani guys sort of have a tough time getting out of, you know, Pakistan cricket to go play in leagues and stuff like that. So it was really good to connect with a lot of them. And then the, you know what I really like? The back office staff, and although it's like a roving, yeah, we play competitions where it's a different team each week. I said this in the article I wrote on Cricket Info. It's like a roving community where a lot of, you know, a lot of people are changing teams every week and every month or whatever, but it's the same people on different teams. So like Suresh, who is our like team manager, was with me at Peshawar 2 years ago. He's now doing it at the PSL. So yeah, it's although you hadn't played in that team before, there are so often so many guys who yeah, you have been involved with in the past. And then you extend that to like the media people who do like you know, photo shoots for the league and stuff like that. It's just it's a whole community. And if you're like willing to go out there and meet people, like you're never gonna be joining a team where you don't know anyone. And that, at least that's been my experience.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's one thing that I think people don't quite understand is just how much it's not just the players and the coaches who move. It's administrators, it's social media people, it's physios, it's masseuses. And so like it's like everyone's on this on that caravan ride. So it's good that you're going over there and you have some familiar faces. Multan Sultan's bat first. Do we need to talk about your innings, mate? 1 of 4? Can we skip that? Or anything you want to add there?
I've been working really hard at my batting and I've had some success in club cricket. But I've also played in really good teams in T20 cricket around the world. So like Hobart, we won it last year. Scorchers, we won it 2 years in a row. So you hardly get a bat. So when I do get a bat, I'm pretty determined to sort of make something of it. Unfortunately, I didn't on this occasion. I got caught on the boundary, but yeah, it was good to get an opportunity at 7, nonetheless.
But then you come into bowl, so you set 185 in the game, and you come into bowl, and the figures look great here, mate. I don't have the advanced numbers, so I'm not gonna take you through ball by ball here. But you went for 1 for 34, 8.5 runs and over. That's less than the runs required in the game. How did the ball come out? How did it feel?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, my first over was in the power play, bowling to two guys who were up there in the leading run scorers for the comp. So yeah, like I always relish the opportunities to bowl in the power play and sort of take the game on that way. And then yeah, like they got off to a few good partnerships. I was really happy with how I bowled. I think with me, some of the things I look for are like pace off the wicket. If I'm getting pace off the wicket and getting guys bowled in LBW, I feel like I'm bowling well. So yeah, I had that, and that yielded me a lot of dot balls. I don't know how many dot balls I bowled in the game, but I bowled a fair few.
11 dot balls.
11 dot balls, yeah. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with that. Yeah, and then unfortunately, like all it takes is one or two bad balls, and you sort of get hit for a couple of sixes, and that pushes the run rate right up. But yeah, at a ground like Rawalpindi, where you're dealing in, I don't know, 50, 60 meter boundaries or whatever it is, yeah, it doesn't take much for the batter to sort of get it over the ropes. And if you can keep them to something like 8 and over, then you're doing a very good job. I think I don't know what par score is there, but it's traditionally a lot higher than other places.
The game doesn't go particularly well. The last three balls of this game are chaos. That's all I looked at. I didn't even look at your stats. I just looked at the last three balls. So off the last over, what did they need? They needed 11 off the last over, and it's dot, two, dot, six, run out, one, and six off the last ball. It's a hell of a game. I know you've lost it, but it's a hell of a game to travel when you go halfway around the world. I suppose you're coming from England, but it's a hell of a game to go in and out of a war zone for to play and then to lose it off the last ball. You're a professional athlete now, and you played in all these games. And professional athletes handle wins and losses a lot better than amateurs do, as you would know in Sunshine Heights. I'm sure some of your teammates probably handle wins and losses far worse than you do. But what is it like to go all the way for that and have the – you must have been on such adrenaline that whole 30 hours, and then suddenly the last ball gets hit for six and you lose the game.
Yeah, I mean, I viewed the whole thing as like just a blessing to be there. Quetta, who we were playing against, were the top-ranked team, for the season, they didn't go on to win it. Lahore had that famous win with bloody Sikandar Razak flying in all over the place. But the feeling was one of gratitude, I think. Like, just grateful for the opportunity, grateful to be back in Pakistan, grateful to sort of like just be on the field playing. You know, like you aspire to play in the biggest competitions in the world, and the PSL is one of those. You lose the game. We were never going to make the finals anyway. So for a lot of us, it was just like a bit of a shootout to, you know, put together a case to then take forward next year into drafts and things like that. I was proud of my like contribution to the game. I think a lot of others were too. As far as it's all concerned, happy and grateful.
What's next? Because it's been a fascinating career. I mean, just going through this podcast here, we've got you, you know, flogging your juice. We'll get to that at the end. That's all right. We've got your international stuff. You've got KMP, all these different things, right? And you're in the Gulf at the moment, playing in some league that I should know the name of, but I've probably forgotten. Have you got a plan, or are you just riding the wave of, as you said, at 18, 19, you didn't think any of this was going to happen. Are you just riding the wave, or do you have a bit of a set thing of, I want to get to this tier, you know, if Zampa's not there, I want to be the backup leg spinner behind him, or potentially the next one? Like, kind of how are you working your way through your career, or is it just vibes? Because if it's just vibes, that's fine. It seems like vibes are doing very well.
There is a deliberate sort of structure to it, and like I'm here in Dubai right now. I've literally just gotten my golden visa like 2 hours ago, which is like fantastic. That's just going to make sort of mobility and global mobility a bit easier for me. Cayman Islands is the next tournament, so it's a T10 competition over there. Went to it last year. Great opportunity, great competition, like really fun to play cricket in like a beautiful pace. From there, I'll go back to the UK, play club cricket, hopefully 100 opportunity sort of pops up. A lot of it is just strategically putting yourself in places so you're a good pick. The barrier, if you're in Australia, is quite high given the cost and the distance of the flight. So, you know, if I want to go play in the Cayman Islands as a replacement player or whatever, I've got to fly 30 hours. It's an expensive flight. When you do land in the Cayman Islands, you're probably like your time zones are everywhere. So for me, a lot of what I do is just like strategically putting myself in places. So I'm a good sort of pick when opportunities arise. As for what I've got going on like outside of the game, yeah. So I sort of said it earlier, but I'm a part owner in Superboost, a sports drink in Australia. We've been doing really well over the past 3 years, sort of getting stocked in national retailers and other places, convenience stores and whatnot. That's been a really great sort of journey for me. It's opened up the world of startups and entrepreneurship and things like that. I'm involved in I'm on the pension the policy committee for the Australian Cricketers Super Fund, which is again it ties back into my experience as Zenith Investment Partners, you know, in funds management and stuff like that. That's been a really cool experience in sort of pensions and superannuation, and it's definitely like an industry I possibly see myself like going into down the track. See how things end up. The opportunities I've had to write articles with ESPN and Crick Info have been amazing as well. Like I do a lot of things outside of the game to sort of help stimulate that way. Been sort of sitting CFA exams and stuff like that in the past few years as well. So
why not? Add on. Just keep. I love it. Next year you'll come back and tell me you're a champion hacky sacker or something. I love it.
Yeah. No. I mean,
Can I give you a trivia question?
Go on.
If you're the second best cricketer ever from Sunshine, who's the best cricketer ever from Sunshine?
Colin Funky Miller, I think, is the. Although I reckon I got him in T20 cricket.
Keith Miller's from Sunshine.
That's right. He is as well. So, well, I'm the third then.
Oh, you're down the third. So we moved you down. Yeah. Look, mate, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And it's following you over the last couple of years, like it's been a whirlwind of like suddenly seeing you pop up everywhere. It's been so enjoyable. And thank you very much for coming on. And hopefully we'll see you again.
Thank you, mate. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.